Yes. Arnell?
Here.
Bagai? I see him.
I can hear Richie's. I'm here.
Thank you. Blazik?
Here.
Brady?
Here.
Caputo?
Here.
Christensen? Fukami?
Here.
Harris? Hero?
Here.
MTS? Lout?
Here.
And Snell.
All right.
And Christensen's here. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Christensen.
So let's move to agenda item two. Review the meeting minutes of our last meeting, I believe, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I'll make a motion to accept the minutes from the previous meeting.
This is Lau. I second it.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 And any opposed?
Aye.
And any opposed? All right, motion passes. Okay, now we'll go on to agenda item three. In essence, to continue our process of reviewing the documents that have been provided by board staff for the application and renewal process.
Can I jump in here, Dr. Arnell?
Yeah.
This is Ryan speaking. So at your last meeting in November, we gave you, I think it was one document, or we split it out now because I think there was a lot of confusion. I can't remember, I think it was Dr. Glazik that was saying, can we just give him an instruction page, stuff like that. So we broke everything out. And that's why it's bookmarked the way it is. So there's an instruction page they get early on. Then there's the permit application, which is also a renewal. It kind of works one and the same. A pediatric endorsement, which was part of the application, and I think it caused some confusion. You guys asked to separate that. So we created that. And then the evaluation form looks similar, but changed a little bit. We addressed a few of the things that you guys had concerns with. And to be honest, I can't remember what those concerns were, but you guys have had an opportunity to look at it. And then the last bookmark there is the ANS, Notice of Supplemental Rulemaking. I'll cover that in just one quick second. But I think this meeting can go fairly quick. I think Blazik only has an hour and 15 minutes or whatever, but I think we'll be done in probably 30 or less. If this is something that you guys are comfortable with, the way these four documents look, I spoke to Dr. Arnell last night. Actually, I think it was the night before, but if this is something you guys are comfortable with and you like this, we as staff can duplicate it for 1302 and 1303, and then probably a more robust conversation with the committee regarding 1304 at a later date. But currently, all you have are these in front of you. Dr. Fukami was also super generous to provide kind of a crosswalk of all of them, and how maybe we can try to incorporate it all into one application. I'm not sure we'll be able to do that. She did not state that, but it was a super helpful document. And one of the things that I missed in the 1301 application is on page 11 of the whole document, and the page 4 of the application, it talks about credentials. And in yellow, it says for initial applicants only. As you guys know, because most of you guys wrote the anesthesia and sedation committee, or excuse me, the anesthesia and sedation rules, dentists, anesthesiologists don't need to provide any of that there. So we're going to have to add something to that. But I just want you to know we are keenly aware of that because of Dr. Fukami, and we will make that change as we move forward. And with that, I don't have anything else to say except I do want to cover the anesthesia and sedation rules, but I'll wait till we get to that And when you're ready, Dr. Arnold.
All right. That sounds good. So unless somebody has a better idea, you know, I think we all had some time to review this document. Maybe we just go page by page and ask if people have comments to make. Does anybody see a better way to do it? And then maybe if there's comments that aren't necessarily tied to a page, we can address those once we've gone through the document. Does that sound okay to everybody? Yeah? Okay. So then let's go ahead, Ryan, if we can, or whoever can put this up on the screen, take control of the screen and put it up on the screen. Let's look at, let's see, what page would it be?
Nine? Is it nine?
Yeah, would it, let's see, it's not showing on my screen. But that first document, general anesthesia and deep sedation application renewal, is that what everybody's seeing as the first document? Actually, we have the instruction page first, right?
That's page 7.
Yes, page 7, right. Yep.
Okay. Why don't we start there if anybody has comments on the content of that page of the document? Anybody have something they'd like to say about that page? No? Okay. And then the next page, which would be the first page of the application for 1301. Does anybody see anything there?
So the plan is then in this, the green, is they are going to insert a drop-down list?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
It's just a placeholder because I didn't think that you guys would understand if I just left a blank there. So okay. It'll be like a drop-down list and you'll select what it is that you're doing.
Okay. And any other comments on that first page?
And what I'll try to do for the next meeting, at least for one of these, is actually show you in PDF like a fillable document. You guys are probably super aware of these because they're already on the board's website, fillable documents. It'll look just like that. But it's hard to see it when it's kind of in this infant stage, especially on the evaluation forms. There'll be like radio buttons that you push yes or no, as opposed to like just looking like you're circling a yes or no.
What does the other mean under licensee identification?
I don't know. I got this from the previous application. So it says practice linked to. And so the point was to have a drop-down list and selecting what it is that dentist does. And if it doesn't fall within that list, there was going to be an other. And then if they selected other, they would have to write it there. The professions changed often. I think it's changed at least twice since I've been here and included.
So then would on that practice limited to one of the selections would be other?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Gotcha. All right.
Cool. All right. Maybe we can go on to page 2 now.
Page 9. Yeah, it's going to be a lot easier, Matt, if you stick with the pages in the packet.
Sure. Okay. So
please.
Page 9. Okay. Right there in the corner. I see it. All right. So page 9, any comments on the content of page 9?
So I have a question, I guess. I mean, is there a need for the secondary place of practice for most folks?
I would say yes, because as a surgeon, you will only have two locations, you know, as opposed to a mobile anesthesia provider. I think if that's what you're getting at, Dr. Fakami, I agree, as a mobile provider, it's not really that relevant. But for someone who's just an oral surgeon who's just saying these are the two practices I work in, I would think that might be appropriate.
Yeah, I'll give you our example. We have two offices, so this would work really well.
Yeah, I know. I guess I'm thinking there are multiple folks have two offices. I didn't mean that per se, but I just thought, would it be easier if there was just one primary? And then if you have, say, three offices or four offices, then it's just easier to have a separate sheet for anything that's sucking it on. But if it's not easier, that's fine.
All right. Any other comments on page 9?
And I take it that not applicable be just something you can click on, and that'll – okay.
This is AAG Monahan. I just wanted to kind of help provide – if it's okay, I just wanted to help to provide a little background for Dr. Fakami, if that's all right.
Sure.
About – okay, so, you know, if you, you know, are a permit holder, right, and maybe you're going to provide services at other places – right. So again, the point of that, and I do believe, and staff can correct me, but in the documents I've seen, there is a primary office, and then there is also a list of secondary offices where they may provide those sedation practices at. And so the board does need to capture those to understand where that provider is providing sedation. But again, staff can correct me. But what I've seen in the documents is that staff actually does have a primary and secondary office.
And it doesn't generally go beyond the secondary office, I think is what Shims was trying to get at. There's people that have more than two, but there's quite a few that have, if they have multiple, it's just two.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
I had a quick question, only maybe we come to it later. And it's kind of related to the conduct, but it's not. Is there anywhere in the document that the individual is asked if they've ever had an, you know, anesthetic complication that has led to investigation or revocation of anesthetic permits? Is there another place in the document that asks that?
No, it's just right here on this page, under the conduct section. Those are the only conduct questions that are asked.
And that is in essence part of your license application, right?
Not really. I think, right, if you have an anesthetic permit and you have an adverse outcome and you lose it for 2 years, you still maintain your license. I don't know, maybe if we want to have a broader, again, I'm not a deal breaker.
I just think you need
a way to make a little broader language. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Reread number 3, Randy. It says it. I mean, if you've had issue with your license or had any disciplinary action, because okay, even if you had an issue with your permit, you never would have an action taken against your permit. It's going to come against your license.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's captured there.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Would you agree with that, Seamus?
I do 100%. And I also recognize, based on my last statement as well, that sometimes as an evaluator, you're not always privy to that information. So I would just encourage you to collect everything that you can. And I do believe that question covers at least encumbrance on your license. And again, the board would take that up if they didn't disclose that. But I do believe that, yes, that's important. And if you have issues where you feel like you don't have information at your fingertips, just please reach out to staff because they can always provide you that information.
Okay. So any other comments on page 9? Let's go to page 10. I have some comments for page 10. I'm sure others caught some of the same thing, but I'll defer to the end just in case other people have caught what I caught. if people have comments on page 10. Cynthia.
So I think we've mentioned it before, but where am I? Maybe I missed it. Is there a muscle relaxant or succinylcholine listed on this?
No, there isn't. That's one of the things I caught.
Okay.
I don't think we can add it. I think this is so I was going to reserve comments regarding the anesthesia and sedation notice or supplemental rulemaking until later. I am aware of concerns that some of the stuff that the previous committee worked on with the board did not get inserted into the rule. We reached out to the board's rules administrator a few times in December. She had surgery, she was moving, and then of course Christmas and, you know, all the other holidays were mingled in with all of that. So she was not able to respond until yesterday. And she said she would get back to me next week after she gets an opportunity to look at it over the weekend. If that's the case, nobody's going to like to hear this, but I think it's the easiest way to manage it. We will have to go back, file another notice of supplemental rulemaking, have another oral proceeding, and then go back to GERT. We haven't gone to GERT yet because of some of these comments that we heard, so we're waiting to see what that reference check will look like. And a muscle relaxer, I think, was part of that conversation because it is not currently in the current rule, the way it is written, the draft rule now.
Well, and I guess I'm asking if I wasn't sure if it was an omission or a typo, because, for example, epinephrine is listed twice in this list here, and so I didn't know if it was accidentally substituted, which would be an easy correction, right? I don't know what is.
And antiarrhythmic is in there twice. Also.
Multiple, yeah, exactly. So it might be just a simple check. Maybe it doesn't have to go as big as that. Maybe it's just the list was replicated incorrectly, and we can just proceed with correcting that to follow what was listed, and we don't have to go the extra step.
I'll double check. Everything that looks good, I did it. If anything was bad, it was somebody else on my staff.
But I mean, I kind of echo what Cynthia, the spirit of what Cynthia is saying. I saw the comments that are going, that were made. They weren't anything new. It was just things that the committee already agreed to with the board and was presented via public comment to the board, and the board already accepted. I mean, hopefully Jessica can agree that these things were already accepted by the board, and they're just minor edits that were omitted, so it doesn't have to go all the way back through the notice and GERC and all that stuff again.
Yeah, I actually having heard that, especially because there's a couple in there, at least they're in there twice. And hopefully we get to the end when the rules are published, this will all be done at the same time.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody wants this. Looking at some of these names, I'm not sure that if you said the name, I could spell it. So if you want to spell, I'll add it. I'll just kind of asterisk it for now, and then we'll remove the asterisk at a later date.
So we just need to remove K, because epinephrine is already on I, and we need to remove L because antiarrhythmic is already at J. And then we need to add paralytic. Is that what everybody agrees would be the appropriate word, paralytic?
Yes.
Ryan, and again, Ryan, you said these will most likely require supplemental rule package.
Yeah.
Okay. So I just want to make sure we don't get too deep into it right now. I appreciate what the committee is doing, and I get it, to help to alert you to these. But if there's a supplemental package and some of these are substantive, it may be more relevant to the process to have those submitted as comments if they are substantive, as opposed to addressing them today.
Yeah, I think that's what will happen. That's why I was saying, let me know what it is now so that when we create the documents, everything will be done at the same time. So I'll just ask for that, what they think is there. Okay. And hope as we progress in that notice of supplemental rulemaking, that will get pulled out too.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Just looking for the clarification. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for keeping us legal. So it's paralytic?
Paralytic, yeah. P-A-R-A-L-Y-T-I-C.
I'm just going to jump in real quick because just to reinforce, I apologize, but, you know, I have the permit right in front of me that we're currently using, and it has in there muscle relaxant. So I'm not sure where we say it got taken off, or it was definitely omitted in this document, I'm thinking. Well,
and just not to harp on it, but I distinctly remember us discussing it in the previous committee. Yeah. Because somebody brought up succinylcholine, and we said, well, with the advancement of now Sugammadex, it doesn't have to necessarily be succinylcholine.
Right.
It can be rocuronium as well. So we definitely, I distinctly remember us having that conversation and agreeing to it. So,
yeah. Yeah, and it was also brought up as a public comment in oral proceedings, and the board approved it.
So, Dr. Blaze, muscle relaxer and paralytic, they're one of the same, correct?
Yeah, but paralytic's a little bit more descriptive. Yeah. I mean, someone could think that a muscle relaxant was, say, a drug like Flexeril, which you take for pain, is considered a muscle relaxant. Where what we're talking about here is a paralytic is a much better word to use to define the drugs that we're talking about, which would be really succinylcholine or rocuronium.
Okay.
Maybe we just say succinylcholine or rocuronium, but, you know, things could advance and then you'd be limited from other better drugs that might become available.
Okay.
Hey, Matt, Dr. Arnell.
Yeah.
This is Heath. I wasn't there when it first started, so the board staff can add me in as late, but I'm on the call now. But with that, I think what happened in the committee was that we decided the 1302 and 3 providers don't need the sucks because we don't want them having to intubate. And I think in an attempt to try to, people wanted to make everything uniform, probably the rulemaking, it just got taken out of 1302 and then left off of 1301.
Yes, so, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
I remember the meeting where it happened and then it was just a mistake. We corrected.
For 1301, it's a mistake.
Yes.
Yes.
It was just a mistake and it got corrected several times, but for whatever reason, it's a mistake that persisted. Yeah.
So I think the issue as well is there was a discussion about naming names. And so if you keep your list as discussed, even with the current edits, are we going to be requiring the 1301 permit holder to have epinephrine as well as another vasopressor? Are we going to allow them just to have a vasopressor? Because I also remember there was broad discussion, and again, it goes back to the comment about saying succinylcholine, is that if you just give the category, it allows the permit holder to select what drug they feel is most appropriate for that category, or drugs, if you will. And to that end, in the spirit of that discussion, and I, again, what I don't think would be a substantive change, is to actually just eliminate epinephrine. I think most people, if they had their choice for vasopressor, they would select epinephrine and or select their own drug. If we don't do that, then the comment again is, when these evaluations are done, are we expecting the permit holder to have two different vasopressors based on how the list is currently?
So I'm going to give you, I don't know the page number. This is the current, I'm going to put it, I don't know if I have access to the chat where it is. No, I don't. Let me try to find the page in our document here because it, I don't know.
Dr. Caputo, I would just, my thought on that point, I think you bring up a very good point. But my thought is, you know, for routine hypotension, you're not going to give the patient epinephrine. But if you have a patient that goes under cardiac arrest and you're following an ACLS protocol, you're going to want that epinephrine. So in my opinion, I think it's appropriate that they must have epinephrine, but that the other vasopressor they choose, whether it's phenylephrine, ephedrine, levofed, you know, they, let's say someone has a dopamine, whatever they want, I think
that's what I was saying.
But I think you must have epinephrine.
You didn't want to say cardiac epi. Yeah, because that was exactly what I was raising my hand about.
Yeah, so if you look at page 42 of the packet, that's the list of the emergency drugs that are in the current notice of supplemental rulemaking.
So I think the vast majority of people applying for 1301 are going to understand. They're going to understand the intent, right? The intent is that they have a vasopressor other than epinephrine, and they also have epinephrine, right?
Not necessarily. And just remember, you're not going to be here forever. And rules change, and it's already been commented on that drugs change. So I'm just making the statement that it just needs to be clear for the evaluators. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care. But do you want epinephrine separately? Do you want to call it cardiac epinephrine? The point being is it's twofold, right? On the one side, is this a minor change or is it a substantive change? Now, I think inserting cardiac epinephrine in this particular event would make it a substantive change, and then you're going to have to go through that process that both Seamus and Ryan were talking about. Now, that may have to happen anyway, but the point being is we want to give clear direction to the evaluators. It's very dangerous in rulemaking to use the word intent because you don't know that, and this already happens already with folks that go and do these exams that they misinterpret what is supposed to be there. And so I think we just should be clear. That's all. I'm not disagreeing with you about what we all may believe, and certainly around this group we may believe, but that doesn't mean everybody else is going to believe the same thing you believe.
All right. Thank you. Jason.
Yeah, I agree with Anthony because I just doing evaluations, I've seen it where people just put, well, it's your vasopressor, and they put epinephrine down. So it just, you know, and as an evaluator, how are you going to refute that? Because what Ali is saying is absolutely correct, too. So, you know, unfortunately it's missed, but that's just what our rules are at, and something to look forward to the next time.
So, so I guess then the question, really the second question that Anthony brought up was, you know, we're talking about this now, but in essence, what we're doing with this document today has to follow the document that has already passed board approval and so on. So if we are going to make changes, then it's got to go through an oral proceedings, right? But it is good, you know, to talk about these things and just take note of them. And if we do go through an oral proceeding, then we can make those changes. Okay.
This is AAG Monahan. If I could just jump in. This conversation is really great. You guys are doing a great job. And the only thing that I was thinking is, you know, what I really haven't heard here from is, you know, these are the minimum standards. But also the board uses these in a situation, specifically in situations where there are adverse occurrences. So you practitioners, you guys are the gold standard. You know what to do. You know what the standards are. So if you can help to create those rules in a way that the board can utilize them, both in situations when they can dispose of a case and say, you know what, there isn't an issue here, or say we can point to a defined issue because we have it, right? we have that at our disposal. So again, I just kind of wanted to provide you guys, there's that other side of the coin that there is the regulation. There's also the understanding and creating that understanding through the statutes and rules, but also how are those going to be applied and will they help the board when it comes to adjudicating these sedation matters, which are becoming really prevalent and really important to the board's job. So I appreciate it. Sorry, guys. Back to your thing.
Thank you.
I had a question on that real quick, Matthew. So I just wanted to ask AAG, are you saying like, would that give us a little bit of latitude, like in the form, just to put in parentheses cardiac? So at least it gives a little bit of awareness to who's ever doing this form?
You know, and I don't want to get into a situation where I advise on hypotheticals, but what I will say is that that could create a situation in which we don't have an adequate amount of information, right? Could you say your question again? I apologize.
Well, I'm just saying, if there's a way for us as the ones being the experts on this, is it a way in the form, even though in rules it just says epinephrine, but in the form you just put in parentheses cardiac, so that who's doing the form kind of like realize, oh, I need to have a vasopressin and cardiac epinephrine. But anyway, I don't know. It's kind of splitting hairs, but.
I get what you're saying, and I very much appreciate the question. Again, you guys are the experts here. If you think that delineation is important, what I can tell you is that the board seriously looks at the epinephrine saturation level when administering, sedation. So it is a big, important part of what the board does. So if you think that providing any of that information for the evaluator will help the evaluator to evaluate that and will help the board to adjudicate it in the future if necessary, I would say that you should include that or consider including.
I think it's just a valid point that Ali brings up because I've done expert witness of people given a cardiac dose of epi for someone that was hypotensive, and it's an issue. So I'm just trying to
understand, and I appreciate the point. I think it's very well heard by everybody, especially any of those individuals who have testified as an expert.
Jason, are you saying you can't give epinephrine for hypotension?
I'm not saying that at all. I think people just give an appropriate dose. And I also think that there's other,
I understand, but you understand what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, 100%. You're 100% correct.
Cynthia, I saw your hand up your hand was up for a moment.
I think I was taking a different point of view with what AAG Monahan was mentioning. If clarity is what we're looking for so that it becomes easier to adjudicate cases or understand where the standards lie, at least in terms of these rules, then I think you have to include epinephrine. I wouldn't take that out. And I think the issue, there's more of a concern of removing epinephrine as a listed item, because then someone might not choose to include it in their kit even because they find alternatives for the other categories and then choose to leave epinephrine out. And I don't know when that would necessarily occur. I still think that everyone's going to make it a primary drug, but there were epinephrine shortages, for example, for a while. And so they may take that as an example, as a reason to say, I'm not going to stock it, right? I'm not going to make the effort to get it. And I just, again, that's one of those drugs that I just think is going to be helpful in multiple categories, not just for hypotension. So we need to have it. The other issues of maybe someone not choosing to carry another vasopressor because they think epinephrine is the one they want to use. To me, that's a lesser issue than not having epinephrine in your kit. Yeah. So I would list it if we could.
So I was just thinking, if we only put cardiac epinephrine, then someone could still say, well, my vasopressor is still epinephrine. What if instead of putting cardiac epinephrine, we just put vasopressor in parentheses other than epinephrine?
No, I don't mind if you have the
list.
I know.
We can leave both and we don't have, it's very explicit, right? Vasopressor other than epinephrine. That way they know they have to have both.
I just would carry epinephrine. I mean, I don't know where the argument is. I think there are multiple drugs that we have that have served multiple things on this list. I've never had an issue with someone using one drug for multiple different issues, right? I mean, anticholinergic can be used as for a bronchospasm, right? All those kinds of things. So I think that we have to kind of look at it like the epinephrine. It is, I agree with not liking the notion that a drug is actually listed in name, but this is one of those where it's its own and I would just have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump in here. I like many people here, I've been doing the evaluations for at least, I would say, 15 years. It's never been an issue, you guys. The doctors that are putting people to sleep have the drugs they need. So I wouldn't deviate too much from what we already have. It's gonna work out really well. Love the discussion, though, but I just think, you know, we got it. Yeah, I mean, I think we got this one.
Heath.
I echo Randy's comments. For one, it's already written in the rule that we got to follow by, so it's kind of a waste of time spinning wheels. But two, whatever they have listed as the evaluator, you can ask them, okay, how much epinephrine are you going to use? And if they give you a crazy dose for what the emergency is that you're going through, then you know they don't really know their epinephrine usage or their vasopressor usage. But it's never been an issue for me in all the evaluations that I've done either.
Thank you. Cynthia.
The only thing I'll share on that, I agree with all those, except I have had one individual who chose not to carry a paralytic, muscle relaxant, what have you, et cetera, because of the concern that they might have to also have dantrolene with it. And so, therefore, I would make the effort to include that item on this list somehow, somewhere.
Okay. Any other comments? On page 3, I'm going to look at my notes. I think I do have one more comment. Can we go? Oh, I'm sorry, not page 3, page 10. Can we go back to page 10?
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say is the language for the mobile permit holder just seems a little awkward. And I just think it's the sequencing of words, but it just says, I hereby affirm that I either travel with or all equipment and supplies are in place. I understand what's trying to be said, but I don't think that's how you want to say it. I think you either say I travel with all equipment and supplies or all equipment and supplies are in place. I really gets to be a little wordy, but there has to be a better way to say it than the way it's currently written.
Yeah, I won't belabor it, but I agree. I think it could be wordsmithed a little bit.
Can you just do like two check boxes? They either do one or the other. So they can mark either I have all of them, all my stuff goes with me, or the other option, well, if you're applying for mobile, is everything's in place.
I just think you say I affirm that all equipment and supplies are in place. That doesn't matter if you travel with them or that they're there.
But this follows the verbiage that's in current rule. It's laid out this way.
I understand, but this is meant to be a version of what's in rule, and so all you are doing is affirming that. It's up to you to adhere. It's up to you to fulfill the rule. So whether you travel with it or not doesn't matter. What you're saying here is you're making sure that all equipment and supplies are in place.
I have a comment that maybe can go with this together, and maybe we can come up with an idea for how to address all the comments. I think I understand. If you look up at the top paragraph there, it's out of our view right now. Can we scroll up a little bit? So it says. Contains the following 14 properly operating equipment and supplies during the provision of general anesthesia and/or deep sedation. I think I understand why it says 14, but I think it's unnecessary because later there's a form, you know, later in this document, there's another form where it kind of mirrors this, but there's 13 because number one is split out from 2 through 14. And I think putting 14 in there will confuse people. It has the same effect if you just say contains the following properly operating equipment.
Yeah.
I don't think we need the 14 in there. And then it also says that in the paragraph we were just talking about, same as the 14 above, we can remove the comment about 14 and it doesn't lose any of the intent, but it will, I think, eliminate some confusion. And then on the section for mobile permit providers, it says for mobile permit only, see footnote on page 2, and then there's like a little space and then it says not applicable. I think we just need to make that visually a little bit more clear that's something that somebody's going to check, right? We just need to put like a checkbox so they know, oh, okay, either I am doing this or this doesn't apply to me. It's just a little confusing for the user when they look at it. But I guess this is going to be an online form, right, Ryan? It'll probably be a little bit more clear.
Hopefully, eventually, we'll have some sort of efficiency that our database vendor can help us with. But I think for the time being, it'll be probably a fillable form, and there will be a check box right there. So they'll either check it because they're not a mobile permit provider, or they would find my initials here. And that language came directly from the rule that you guys wrote.
Okay. But the number 14 wasn't in rule, right?
No, that was me. Actually, it was probably one of my staff.
Okay.
Go back to the previous statement.
Yeah, I think removing the 14 will take out some confusion because it just, as you read it, like the 14 like pulls your mind one direction and you're like, okay, what 14 are we talking about? And then I think it'll just function better if it doesn't have that 14 in there.
Yeah.
So what, before we move on from this page, we should finish our discussion on Anthony's comment about the wordsmithing of that paragraph. Can we just maybe check that that is exactly what it says in rule?
Yeah, it
doesn't matter what it says in rule. All it's saying is, I hereby affirm that all equipment and supplies are in place and in appropriate condition at any dental office or dental clinic where I will administer general anesthesia and or deep sedation. The rule says that you either have to travel with that stuff or it has to be there. When you affirm that it's there, it doesn't matter how it got there. You're just affirming what is in rule. That's all I'm saying. So what the purpose of the application is just to support what's in rule, and by removing all that language, it makes it less confusing, kind of to your point about the 14, but it supports what's already in rule. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
This is AAG Monahan. I apologize. I just want to make sure the rule we're talking about says affirm, right? Dr. Pluto, that's what you were saying. It says
affirm. Yeah, it says
affirm. It does not say verify each separate one.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Cynthia.
I agree with what Anthony's saying, but to even streamline it further, I have to admit if we go with that phrasing, which I agree with you on, it actually is exactly what's up there at the top of the affidavit. So it doesn't matter whether you're mobile or not. Essentially, all of us are affirming that this equipment and medication will be in place and in functioning order every time general anesthesia is performed, right? And likewise, the second, and same when you look down at the next place where there's a place to put an initial where you have to affirm that you have the personnel, that they all have BLS, et cetera. That phrasing also is duplicated in under the mobile permit heading, but yet I find that duplicative because we're all essentially attesting to the same thing, whether you are mobile or not. And I'm wondering if there's a way to coalesce or compress this all into one affidavit that makes sense, that serves both purposes.
I think that's a really good point, Cynthia. Because you are right. It says it at the top of the affidavit section, and it says it under mobile. We could just say, we could compress it so that it basically says whether I am mobile or not, I am
correct.
I'm attesting that this is all going to be there.
Each and every time you provide anesthesia, this is the requirement that you are following. That's correct. You are responsible as a permit holder to be meeting these particular rules.
Yeah.
And again, I apologize. I'm the wet blanket here. This is AAG Monahan. I just want to make sure if each one requires an affirmation, that if we're going to combine the affirmation, we make those delineated and very clear. Again, just so that the permit holder knows exactly what they're signing and you know, attesting to, just to make sure. Thank you.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to say. I'm the one that created most of this, and I pulled this directly from the rule, which, to Dr. Caputo's point, I guess who cares? But a lot of it is kind of like school teachers, even all the way through college, you kind of still speak to somebody as though they're in fourth grade, even though all of you guys are doctors, but not everybody thinks the same way as this group of people. And so that's why it's written the way it is. I'm totally happy taking whatever suggestions you guys have. I've written everything down that I can. You guys will get another pass at this at the next meeting.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying, but it's pretty clear that even as a mobile permit holder, you're applying for that just for that designation of mobility. You're not applying for anything different. And I think Cynthia said it actually really well. There's a lot of duplication, but I don't think the rules, by putting it on the application, I don't think it takes away from what's in rule. If we actually took out that whole paragraph for mobile permit only and just went to the one above and then the heading, it would accomplish the same thing as what is in rule, because even if you're a mobile permit holder, you're obligating yourself to the rules. You're not separate to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think the whole purpose of having it in here is so that it can be distinguished between who's a mobile permit holder versus who isn't. And if there's nothing to distinguish it, and if we don't care, we don't care, but mobile permit holders have to pay a different amount than non-permit holders, and that's the key. But you guys are the ones that ask to make certain that mobile permit holders aren't paying for every single location they go to. Whereas if somebody only has two locations, they'll pay for those two, but not multiple. Because I think what was happening is there was multiple people that would have more than two, and they would pay for the first one and then like five additional ones. And what Sherry and her staff would do is call them and say, hey, would you rather do a mobile permit as opposed to five different permits, because you're paying a lot more on the five than if you just got the mobile permit. And so there's no clear distinction. And I think that the rules have made that confusion for staff and reporting mechanisms that we need when we have reports to the governor's office and whoever else. So that's why it's on here. But I would take any suggestion you guys have. Dr. Kukami, if you want to put it in an email to me, I'll get it in here exactly the way you guys think it would look better. It's your committee, and that's why you guys are in charge of creating the forms.
So, Ryan, if I understand you correctly, you're saying we just need a mechanism for this application to clue in board staff that they're issuing a mobile permit. Like, there has to be something on here that says, I'm applying for a mobile permit, by checking this or affirming this or something like that.
Yeah. I mean,
but it's in the application. When you initially sign up, you indicate whether you're going to get a mobile permit or not. That's all that's all the direction I think staff needs to know. What I'm trying to say is the rules apply to the mobile permit holder, whether they're a mobile permit holder or not. So they're all the same rules. So I think their attestation to safety and preparedness is all the same. So I think Cynthia made the point really nicely in that to say it again just becomes duplicative for the mobile permit holder when they're already held to that standard. And it doesn't change anything on the board side, because all you're looking at is, as you rightly said, Ryan, is are we charging that person differently for a permit based on their mobility or not?
And I think what Anthony says is exactly right. We're dealing with two different issues here. So this is just the form for the evaluator. The board has already seen the application for the mobile permit holder, and then they say, okay, we got you down as a mobile permit holder. You still need a site visit, and this is for the evaluator, but we're just evaluating, do they have everything in place, and they're signing an attestation that if they do sedation, they're going to have all this stuff in place that they've agreed to, but this isn't the only information that the board's getting to say whether they're mobile or not. That was established when they turned in their application before this process even went about.
The page we're on right now is part of the application. The evaluation is coming up next.
And committee, to my point, this is AAG Monahan. I think that there can be a way to combine it as you discussed and delineate it within the language. I think that's still easy. I don't think that that's overly difficult. If it's in the same document, right? I think that's fine. I just want to make sure that if the rule requires it, we do it. Otherwise, we address the rule and whether the rule is necessary. But that's not the time to do it now. But that I think that would be the appropriate approach.
Heath, your hand is still up. Did you have more to?
Yeah. So to Ryan's point, then. So if what I'm I apologize. I thought this was for the evaluation. I didn't know that this was for the initial application. If this is the initial application, then yes, the mobile needs to be delineated in there, because that's what's saying I'm applying for a mobile permit. And that verbiage, I think, should stay there. I was misunderstood in thinking that this was what the evaluators would have and what they were evaluating. But the board needs to know if it's a mobile permit or not on the initial application.
Thank you. Cynthia.
So I took a look at the rule as written anyway. Now, I don't think that there'll be, I think we can do this in a way where it won't be, we can still make a delineation of who has a mobile permit and also combine this somehow and still be consistent with what's written in the rule. So if with the committee's permission, I'll just work on that together and we'll try to have it present for next time. Is that all right? Okay.
I think that sounds great. Okay. Any other comments on page 10? All right. Let's go to page 11. I did have one comment, and I think, Ryan, this will be taken care of by default. We just need under next to the options for the pediatric credentials, we just need like checkboxes or something there. Because under the yellow subheading credentials, they're selecting one of those three things, right?
Yeah, and the boxes will come in when it's super hard to make, not super hard, but it's, you do it in Word or some sort of processor. And you have to go to an Adobe, and then you go to an Adobe form, and then it becomes an Adobe Sign document. So there's like four different steps. And so I could have put a square in here, but without going through all the craziness of it, there's multiple steps where you put it in, and the only one that matters is the last one. So that's why it's left out. But it would have it up there that you would check.
Yeah, I assumed it would be there. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't forgotten. That was my only comment on this page. Any other comments on this page? Okay. Let's go on to page 12.
You can probably skip this.
Just skip that. Yeah.
It's mandatory pursuant to statute, and I'd go to page 13. This is the affidavit that you guys asked me to create separate from the application. And you just need to take a look at it.
Cynthia.
So one language item on about midway down. The phrasing, I have successfully completed a code-accredited residency program that has a standard for pediatric anesthesia training more than 2 years preceding this application. To my mind, as a new reader of it, makes it sound like your pediatric anesthesia training had to be more than 2 years. But I think what the intent was probably that, so that the training, if it occurred more than 2 years ago, is that correct?
Yeah.
Then you do the other attestation to the number of cases, et cetera. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that is how it reads.
I guess I read it initially. I thought, oh, we have to have 2 years minimum pediatric anesthesia training. At least that the residency had to contain that as within its time. And so I thought maybe it would be clearer if it was phrased as for pediatric anesthesia training preceding this application by more than 2 years. Just switch the order. Would that be easier to understand?
I think it reads fine. And I think if you read the whole paragraph, it makes sense. I don't think, from my perspective, it reads fine.
Okay.
The only thing I was going to mention, I agree with you, Anthony, reading the whole paragraph, then like programs like mine, it works. Because really I did my pediatric anesthesia probably 3 or 4 years prior to my graduation, because your last 2 years in a dual degree program, 1 year you're in general surgery, then 1 year you're in your maxillofacial program. Now, in that maxillofacial program, you do pediatric anesthesia, but that's not, it's part of your training. Maybe am I splitting hairs? I just want to throw it out there. Do you think that would ever be a problem? I mean, again, never has been in the past. We've been using this form. Well, this is a new form, I guess, with the pediatric endorsement. But, you know, it is a reality that some of the guys in dual degree programs do their pediatric anesthesia rotation in their fourth year of residency.
Tell me what you think of this, Randy. You know, I think that'll be a unique question. If somebody asks the board that, isn't that something that, you know, somebody would ask the board and the board would give them a clarifying statement that I think it would be really hard to think of all of the different scenarios someone could think of, you know, to on a question in that line.
What's the question?
He's basically saying, you know, his residency was so many years long, and he did all of his pediatric training on the front end, and so does he then have to use the second attestation because he did his pediatric training more than 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
No, because it says I completed a CODA-accredited residency program, so that takes care of it. It's not saying when you had your training within that program.
Yeah.
So, no, it's when you completed the program. If you did it within 2 years, you check the first box. If you did it more than 2 years, you check the second box, and then you make sure you further affirm the following requirements.
Yeah. And I agree. That's how I see it as well. The point I was trying to make is I think it's going to be really rare to ask that question, and they'll ask the board and the board will give them the answer you just gave.
Maybe.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
Well, and if it helps the committee, you know, in cases recently, it's been brought up, you know, well, that isn't specifically listed in the rules, right? And again, the rules can't capture everything. The rules don't tell you, you know, at what titration level you should administer sedatives to a patient who's under any kind of sedation, right? That's the standard of care issue, and it's very hard to capture that in the rules. So I just wanted to add that in for you.
Cynthia, you had your hand up. No, on accident. Okay. Any other comments on this page? Ryan, if we can just make if you can make it just a note, we also need check boxes there in the final form.
He knows.
On this page.
Yeah. I'm aware. Thanks.
All right. So let's move on.
14 can keep going.
Okay. Any comments on this page? I think probably same comment here for paralytic, right? Which we'll address.
You're on 15.
Yeah, on page 15. Yeah. I think that one, you know, the paralytic on this page would be addressed at the same time as on page whatever it was, 7, 8, or 9 or whatever. Any comments here? Okay, let's go on to 16. And now, Ryan, this is the evaluation form, right?
Yeah, this is. Starting on page 15.
Okay.
And this is the document that we hope to be in tablet, or you can use your phone or whatever. So where it says yes or no, it would be a radio button, you poke yes or no or whatever. So right now it looks wonky, like you would circle it, but it's not.
Okay.
And for the next meeting, I'll be a little more clear and provide you with more of a finished product.
Cool. Any comments on this page? All right, let's, Jason.
So number one, okay, this is the evaluation part. So I guess I'm confused. What if someone's doing like a simple mass down and induction for a simple tooth extraction? Is that a new line of bags and fluids? Does that stay within rules? I thought that was eliminated, but.
I agree. I agree. I think we changed that language, because of, you know, a scenario where maybe you, you know, have an IV with a pigtail, but you're not running a bag in line, or, you know, there's a 100 scenarios we could come up with. Where there might not be a full bag and a line attached, there may be another, you know, something else attached to the IV catheter.
Well, you may, I mean, yeah, we talked about that, like ENTs, and there's a lot of different procedures that, you know, technically you're under general anesthesia, but it's such a short duration that you may not even have an indwelling catheter in place.
I think that you want to split the hair here a little bit. I don't think anybody's telling you how to, and I don't think the rules say how you do your cases. I think what this is particularly addressing is if you were to have an evaluation done. So I think there's an expectation that you would be doing more than just a mass. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Anthony. The only reason it flagged my consciousness.
No, I think this is for the evaluation. If there was an evaluation done, then this is what we're expecting to see. If you made a decision on a different case to do exactly any of the approaches you mentioned, that's going to be something that you make a decision to do. And I think that's supported within the rules.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments on this page? Okay, let's go on to page 17. Any comments here? Okay, page 18. Jason.
This may just be a question for other evaluators, since I'm kind of new to it. I kind of go through all the scenarios 1 through 12, and then I see 13 as other. Is it optional just to do a few of those, or are we expected to do all of those per evaluation?
Yeah, an interesting point. I actually always wondered why other was on there. But I don't think it's to say it's an interesting interpretation on your part, but I think the understanding always was that you would go through at least the identified ones, so 1 through 12. But I guess maybe it gave the evaluator the opportunity to say, well, I'd like to know something more about X, and so therefore there's the other.
Dr. Hero.
Thanks. You know, I know there's some challenges the board meets with evaluators because it's really voluntary by these evaluators that come in and do it. But I wonder if there would be an opportunity to try to calibrate those who sign up to do this so that questions like this can, as best we can, standardize it. So the permit applicant is hopefully having a relatively similar evaluation experience when they come into the office. And I don't think that that's a question to deliberate on right now, but it may behoove the committee to have that conversation. And I think we would be dependent upon some guidance from Ryan on if that's doable. But if it is, I think it could be a very good thing to offer some kind of calibration.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would be great. All right, any other comments on page 18? Keith?
And I'm sure Dr. Caputo would be happy to volunteer to be the person that calibrates everybody.
Keith?
I was just going to say, I kind of like the other there just because it gives a little bit of flexibility in, like Anthony said, Anthony Caputo said, Dr. Caputo, you know, one like top, for example, with a 1302 permit holder, I use that to talk about if they're over sedated. Like there's nothing in here that talks about, but it's just a simple thing that I think every 1302 provider should be able to recite. I need to pull out my Narcan or flunazenil and how much to administer and whatnot. So I like that there. But I agree the standardization would be helpful.
All right. Any other comments on page 18? All right, let's go to 19. Any comments here? Okay, page 20. Nothing here has changed, has it, Ryan? I don't think anything has changed here. So this is on 20. This section really hasn't changed much in anything that we've done, right?
No, not really. And this will also be like radio buttons where the evaluator will select category one or pass category one, category whatever. And then, but page 21 has changed, but I think you'll be there then.
Okay. Heath.
Just on 19, I don't remember this verbiage. It says confirm that the applicant has records supporting the following, and it has all the CE stuff. I've never asked for hard copies verifying, like, that they have records as an evaluator.
So I was going to jump in when we got to this page, and then nobody had any comment. I was going to talk about this, but I think Dr. Blazek brought this up last meeting. It was a little more in depth than the last one, and we narrowed it down to this. And so on the instructions page, which we've already passed, it tells the applicant to be prepared to show the evaluator this. You don't have to capture a copy of any of it. You just have to, this is in the rule, and you should look. I wouldn't spend a ton of time rifling through to make sure, but I mean, I don't even want to say that in a public meeting. I just did, but it's in rule. It says that they have to participate in 30 clock hours of continuing education in that. And so, that's why it's in here. And it was a little more robust last time, and you guys didn't want to do all that. You just wanted them to prepare it, have it aside, so that when you come in, go, where's your CE, you look at it and go, okay, great.
All right, Jason.
Sorry to even ask this. I'm just on very limited time today, but is there still a quorum if I dismiss myself?
Was that a yes, Sherry? We couldn't hear you.
Yes, there is. Yes.
Okay. I apologize to have to bow out, but it's a big day for me, so I appreciate
Happy anniversary,
it.
Jason. Thanks, brother.
Thank you, Eddie. All right, see you guys. Yeah. Take care.
Thank you. That's some dedication to show up at all on your anniversary.
I think I'd be getting a divorce.
Don't ask Ryan about that. Sorry, that's not appropriate.
We appreciate what Ryan's doing, that's for sure. Hopefully his wife will feel that as well.
Ryan, you said that this is from the rules, but we've never looked at this before. The only thing we've ever looked at is number two, and that's the completion of the number of cases that were required. So are you saying that historically evaluators should have checked? I always thought that was just something that was done through the renewal application itself.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the conversation from last time. I remember it being brought up, but I thought at the end the conclusion was that board staff were receiving those CEs and then confirming them and then passing on word to the evaluator, oh, by the way, that has, by virtue of this on-site evaluation being scheduled, they have checked indeed that the CE hours were met.
Does it even need to be? Because this is an on-site evaluation, right? I don't know that it even needs to be part of this.
Well, I mean, I would defer to Seamus, but subsection A, or excuse me, F of 1301 is all related to the evaluation. None of it is related to the application. And so if you look at the reference that I referenced in this section, R411-1301-F2, and then that points to 1301U, and 1301U establishes these things here. So 1301F is the evaluation. So if you don't want it in here, we don't have to have it in, but it is part of the evaluation, and I would defer to your attorney to see if you can take it out.
Thank you, Ryan. Again, because it's specifically enumerated and Ryan and I had this conversation, the discussion was, it is appropriate to have it in there because it is specifically enumerated. Again, if you want to make a recommendation to the board that you don't agree with that, again, I am just going to tell you, the same thing that I'm going to tell the board. And that if it's specifically enumerated, then I would put it in there. If it asks for an attestation or affirmation, then that's different. But again, because certain sections do require different things, we need to give meaning to those that do require specific enumerations.
Ryan.
I will, if I can, again, sorry to speak before Dr. Fukami. The conversation last time, we wrote all this out, and then there was something for the evaluator. You guys asked us to put it in the instructions, and we did that. And I forgot at the bottom of this, if you look at 1, 2, 3, right underneath 3, it says initials of testing, so all the aforementioned. I think we could make this clear, but it's the person you're evaluating will initial, and hopefully they'll initial by showing you the documents so you guys aren't rifling through it. So you guys had asked. The applicant that you're evaluating will initial your document or your tablet or whatever it is at that spot. And that's why it's right there like that. And I can make it clear. So it's the initials of the person being evaluated and not the evaluator.
Cynthia.
Well, so I'm looking at the rules
the section U. I know it is enumerated in D, but I don't see that it says it has to be part of the evaluation process. All it says is that it's part of the permit renewal. And so to that end, I just want to make sure it's part of the permit renewal, because if you think about it, if you house it within the evaluation process, that means that DAs like myself will not be completing that section. Right? So when we do the renewal, these three items will somehow need to be reflected within the application. It would be better if it was put there and not in the evaluation process, because we'll never see it then.
So I hate to repeat what I said earlier. If you look at the first reference, it's R411-1301F2. And then, and we kept it as general as possible, but delineated further is little f, as in Frank, for renewal applicants, records supporting continued competency as specified in subsection U. And subsection U contains what's in on this document. And F is the evaluation. It is not part of the application.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Okay. So it references U, but it doesn't actually, as saying it needs to be part of the evaluation. I mean, I'm fine if it's in the evaluation. And again, I'm not sure this is the way to do that there anyway, but in addition, I'm saying, where does it go for our renewal?
Because in order for you to renew and not have an evaluation, you would have to submit that you're an ADBA member in good standing, which would then say you completed that continuing education. That was the whole point of that. So you would have satisfied. The only thing you're not satisfying, but this would have been part of it anyways, is the number of cases.
10 cases that need auditing.
That would be it. And you're not, we're not auditing them per se. We're just verifying number, right? I know what you mean, though.
But you know what I mean. Yeah, the case machine. There's still a little bit of wonkiness on this, right, as far as how do you.
Not really. Not from a CE perspective, because, again, for a.
Was there CE listed? Was there a CE requirement section on the application? I'm just blanking right now, if anyone recalls.
No,
was that
is,
in the application?
It's part of your, yes, it's part of the submission, yes, that you're acknowledging that you've accomplished your CE. But to Ryan's point, he is correct, because that is the reference in that section, because it's too specifically the renewal evaluation. And that's what it says. The on-site team shall evaluate the following. And then that little F addresses that. So that is correct based on how this was written. The only way to change it would be to make that recommendation, like Seamus said, make the recommendation to the board to remove F, and then see how the board feels about that. The little F in that F2.
I think it's fine the way it is. I mean, it obviously grabbed everybody's attention because it was new, but unless we're going to go back and change everything in rule.
If you say F2F though, Ryan, is that offensive?
Only if it's your anniversary.
Yeah, I mean, it's there. But, Cynthia, it doesn't take away from what the DA would have to say. Because, again, you're doing a different process by virtue of your academic credentials, if you will, or your training credentials.
Okay. Any more comments on that? All right, let's go to page 20. I think nobody had comments on 20. Is that correct? Let's go to 21.
21 is just a mandatory doc. 21 and 22 are mandatory. It's been significantly reduced. We just and this is a document that Seamus has reviewed. It sort of sucks that it has to be part of the process, and this will just be a document. They have to sign off. You have to sign off as the evaluator and has to turn in with the evaluation. I'm not a huge fan of it, but sorry.
Yeah. It doesn't say anything here about them providing breakfast when we do this, correct?
I feel like I was unfairly targeted in that response.
You? Not at all.
I do have a question about this, not necessarily anything in the form, but just, is this them giving permission? Is it the form that gives us as the evaluator permission to be there and do the inspection? And if it is, can we put it at the very first of the document so that as an evaluator, I remember, hey, I need to get this signed rather than going through everything and having it at the end of the document?
Yeah. Ryan, do you want me to discuss or would you like to handle that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just shortly, again, this is a required document. I did go back to your question, yes, and it should be in the front. It's the first thing. Get it out of the way right away. It is just their rights. That's what it is. Well, I shouldn't say just. It is their rights. And you're doing this evaluation. So it's much different than a situation in which we're asking, you know, we're saying, hey, we're coming in 48 hours, right? They're asking, they're setting up this time frame. However, the legislature has said that any time we do any evaluation, inspection, anything like that, this is just the normal course of business. We provide this, have them sign it. You know, if they want to have an attorney present, that's fine. Again, I think you've all pointed out the logical obvious a lot of times is that they're asking for this evaluation. They need this evaluation. This is just so that they understand their rights, and we are required to give it to them. So I would get it out of the way immediately. Again, they've been provided notice. If they don't want to perform the evaluation, then I would just request that you call Ryan or staff and discuss that, why they don't want to go through an evaluation they've requested themselves, and we can address it at that time.
All right. I think that's currently what's done. And Heath, to your point, I think most of us cover this right away. Honestly, the part that I struggle with, and I understand everything you just said, Seamus, but that's what I get stuck on. I mean, I don't understand why they refuse to sign the form, and or they're not present, because how could we do the evaluation if they're not present? And wouldn't they be the person that would be authorized to sign the form in the first place? So those have always been sort of confusing things to me because I never understood it, right? Because if I'm there to do the evaluation, they obviously are – if I do the evaluation, which I have to do, they're obviously accepting my performance of that evaluation. So that disclosure is just basically a straightforward – there's nothing really to deny in that. But maybe you can help me out on the legal end as why that's even necessary.
Well, and thank you, Dr. Pudo. And I really, you know, I don't want to get too much into hypotheticals, but I will say again, it is a requirement, and it is a Loctite requirement. The legislature decided that this was a requirement. So that is why we do it. It is their rights. Now, whether they want to sign the document, that's a different question. And again, if you run into that situation, you know, I would just appreciate that you would call staff and we can address that at that time. Okay. And again, I'm always available, right? Now to your point again, and I don't want to get too far down the road on this because it's not something we've had to take out to its logical end yet. But again, since 2006, and I went back and I found records, documents, since 2006, the evaluations did contain this exact same document, right? So It has been a board, practice, and it is something that the board does. Now, as far as your report goes, and that's the thing that I want to reserve my comments, but I will say, it does, there are requirements. It says if you do any kind of inspection that you'll do a follow-up within 30 days. And you'll do another follow-up 30 days after that. And you'll do, you know, and you'll provide the report within 30 days. Now, it's my understanding that these reports are provided to the, you know, the 1301 permit applicant at the time, or staff provides them right away. If in the event that you determine that they are not passing, there are options that they can go through. And yes, staff will need to say every 30 days, this is where we're at. The report hasn't changed. Where are you at with your stuff? Have you completed any of the continuing education towards your next evaluation? But for people who pass the evaluation, you provide that evaluation at that point. Then your requirements to provide any other documentation as an evaluator are done. Does that make sense?
You know, I understand, I guess, but there's nothing in here about the 30-day thing. It just says that they are recognizing that we're doing this evaluation. And I always thought it was weird for them to deny that because we're going to still do the evaluation. Because I would think if they denied to sign the form, then they don't want us to do the evaluation, and therefore they wouldn't get a permit. It's weird that way. I get it. Maybe there's a legal aspect to it. I just thought it was always weird to say that they refused to sign the form and or that they weren't present because, again, how could we do the evaluation if either of those were true? That's all.
Yep, I get it. I get it.
I appreciate it.
No problem.
So with all that, can I just ask Ryan or board staff to move this to the front? Because, Anthony, I agree. I've done these before, but it's a separate document because we have papers, and I put it at the front of my papers.
Yes.
This is now on my phone, and I would like it at the first when I open it up.
Sure. That's fair.
Yeah, I made Dr. Snow, sorry. I made a note to reorder the document, so this will be first.
All right. Any other comments on page 21? All right, let's move on to page 22.
I think that's the 22 is the last, and then
okay.
It kind of got wonky. The rules got mixed in with the process.
But yeah. All right. Hey, Ryan, I think you and the board staff did a really great job with this. I can't believe how well it was done. You guys did such a great job. Thank you.
I agree. Very well done.
Thank you. We'll try to draft it again or redraft it. I'll send whatever I fix to Dr. Pukani. And then the master Washington Post editor, and then she can let me know. And then we'll get you guys all of them, we'll mimic 1302, 1303 to this one, and then you guys can work on 1304 at a later date.
Perfect. All right, Ryan, is there anything else we need to do tonight or anything else you need to fill us in on before we close up?
Just to reiterate that the notice of supplemental rulemaking, which should have already gone to GERC, we were anticipating it should have been reviewed by GERC at the end of the month of December, and then the council meeting in January. Obviously, that didn't happen. Jessica will respond hopefully over the week. The board, if everything is correct as we've all listened to, then the board would have to review it again. They have a February meeting. They have a January 24th meeting, which we'll not be able to get on. Well, maybe. We'll see. But it would be January 24th or the last Friday of February. And then they'll have to probably do another notice of supplemental rulemaking. And then an oral proceeding will be within 60 days after whatever date, either January 24th or that February meeting. And then it'll go hopefully to GERC from that point. It's super frustrating, but it's easier to do it that way, even with that 60-day statement, than it is to start the whole process all over again.
Okay. All right. So sometime between now and our next committee meeting, we'll have 1302 and 1303 to look at. Is that right? And then we can all... Everybody can review it and come with comments if there are any. Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, unless anybody has anything else, let's go ahead and adjourn the meeting. And I think I can speak for everybody in expressing our gratitude to Ryan and board staff for putting so much time and effort into this. This is great.
Thank you so much, Ryan. The board. Awesome.